from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi, I'm Bill DeYoung. This is the Catalyst Sessions from the beautiful downtown offices of the St. Pete Catalyst. High above downtown St. Petersburg, I can see the still not yet finished Museum of the American Arts and Crafts Movement from my window. And if I look really hard, I can see the water. And guess what? It's not raining. So it's very, very nice out there. Thanks for joining us today. My guest is Stephanie Gallart. You can see her there. She's right there, waving, beautiful as always. And Stephanie, of course, is the CEO and the producing artistic director of American Stage Theater, which has some exciting news that was kind of announced Friday. That was it. That was a really interesting hour of virtual.
I'm glad you found it interesting. It's still so bizarre to me.
Well,
to
it was a lot like with people in that sessions, way. Frankly, it dragged a little bit, but at the end, I was like, oh, it was great to see Jared and everybody else in there too. You brought the whole gang around. So the idea is that you finally can say we have a new season.
Yeah,
it's called Reimagine.
Right.
Give me the one line on it. Tell us what your sort of theory on this is what we're doing. What is it all about, Alfie? You know,
this is about what is the essence of who we are as an organization and our answer to moving forward with that essence. So to be a little bit more, put a little more nuance to that, the essence of American Stage is to be a community gathering place using the tool of storytelling to bring people together, to make us feel more connected, to build empathy, to explore ideas and have conversations. We're living in a time where that need is greater than it has ever been, at a time when we have been stripped away of our mechanisms for doing that. And so, and because we've all been living in a place of so much uncertainty and so much contingency planning and what if, and if this, then this, that I really wanted to craft a season that would provide us some level of certainty at a time when we can't be certain of so many things. So was the concept behind Reimagine, asking us to reimagine what it looks like to connect and come together, but also reimagine, you know, what the role of our arts institutions are and what our role of storytelling is at this time too, where we're really coming to a racial justice reckoning. So there's a lot of things to reimagine. And then of course, you know, as we get to the latter part of the year, reimagining the future of American Stage and American Stage leadership.
There's some exciting stuff there when you get into the, you know, the return to live, which we will talk about in a minute. I assume, I don't have to think about it too much. It was probably pretty frigging difficult to sort of say, okay, our 2019-20 season is sputtered out. Let's look at 2021. This, and it kept changing all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, that uncertainty must drive you crazy. So instead of reimagining, it's sort of like redefining minute by minute. Is that about right? Is that what it was like?
Yes.
Holy crap, what do we do now?
It was, you know, we put together a summer season. So, you know, kind of that was a chunk of time to give ourselves some more, you know, here's some structure, here's some certainty. But, you know, with that, every step along the way, it's been even inside of that, it's the, you know, uncertainty of what kind of union contracts we can establish to be able to work with the actors. What kind of contracts will the licensors of the titles that we do provide for us now that we're not able to do these works in, you know, in the intended live settings? Will people tune in for digital work? When can we, you know, what will the parameters around coming back to being live, even though we're seeing other businesses reopen? We know that large group assembly is still a ways out, especially in the state of Florida. So it's been a lot of that, a lot of, you know, again, trying to kind of make decisive decisions where we can, but wanting to remain open to an ever-evolving landscape. And when you add in to the fact that there's been so much polarization around this, I mean, who would have thought? I mean, it's a pandemic. How, you know, what is there to argue about? There, you know, there's data, and we do our best to follow the data, but it's become kind of personalized in a lot of ways. And so responding and trying to be understanding that not everybody is seeing this pandemic from the same perspective and have different opinions about how businesses should or shouldn't be responding. It's been extraordinary.
I just sometimes, so many people I talk to, and I'm so impressed that I don't know anybody who just folded and said, I can't deal with this. There's too much uncertainty here. And there's always this little ray of hope, this optimism that, yeah, we're going to come out of all this stuff.
What you mean it looks in the like arts?
Yeah, in the arts. Yeah, yeah, all in yeah. general. You know,
I think, I mean, in the arts, speaking specifically to the kind of constitution that people who are in the arts are made of, I mean, it is, you know, an exceptionally resourceful group of people in general. And so I think that that's bearing out in this time. And it's also a really collaborative group of people. And this is a time where we need one another in new and interesting ways. So I'm Yeah,
that sounds like such a euphemism, though, Stephanie. Like new and interesting ways. Meaning we can't be in the room together.
Well, we have to use euphemisms. But I like that you challenge them, so we can talk about, well, what are we really talking about?
What are you really talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about, like, holy crap, you know. Fill it in there.
What do we do? Like, what do we do? What do we do?
What yeah. do we do? But we know that we have a purpose, and that's why I use the word, you know, what is the essence? What's essential right now, because we really are being asked to consider what is the essential reason for our existence.
Well,
and so we can keep it. Yes. Yeah. And why, and then the why behind that, why tell stories? And that's where I go. Like we tell stories because stories, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a list of reasons that storytelling is important. I think that we would all agree that storytelling is, of course, there's the, you know, entertainment is the minimum, you know, thing we try to accomplish through storytelling. But bringing people, giving us a sense of our own humanity, making us feel a little less alone in the world, reinforcing the things that we experience, but also showing us, you know, kind of experiences that are not as familiar to us, and in order that we might be a little bit closer together. So those are the essence of what we do. So new and interesting means, okay, we can't do that the way that we know we're good at doing it. So we have to risk being really vulnerable and doing it ways that we're not yet really good at doing it.
Let's talk about the three shows that start in October. Rachel Linnett's play, Letters to Kamala. Can you, which is, now these are going to be virtual and live, or just, these are all virtual, the first three?
So the first three digital theater pieces in 3 months will all be just digital. Yeah, when we will go into 21.
Yeah. Will they just be performed once and then send out video by the world, or will there be multiple performances of each?
There will be multiple performances of each. We'll continue to evolve with each of them as the pandemic evolves, and as therefore the meaning that, you know, where we may start off with performers in their own spaces. We may end up being able to bring a performer into a space to perform, you know, as things continue to evolve with the pandemic, and therefore right. evolve with our union negotiations and what, you know, our safety measures that we're able to provide for the performers. That'll continue to evolve. So we kind of have a couple of different ways at, as we work with the playwrights, the way the digital works can be presented, but they will be presented more than once, several live performances, and then following up with some recorded performances.
Well, I was very, the Katharine Hepburn thing I didn't see as essentially, it's great, and Janice is great. I mean, that's not what I'm saying, but Letters to Kamala, and then Nosotros la Gente, which is Jerry Montoya's work. You know, there's something political and very American about both of these things. And you were talking about a purpose in putting this season together. And I think this is what you're talking about. Maybe these shows.
Yes. I mean, I would, the Kate Hepburn piece is, I have something to say about that too, how it fits in, but certainly.
Oh, you know, I'm gonna be watching that one too, by the way. And I don't mean to imply otherwise.
I think that Rachel Linnett and Jerry Montoya are both playwrights that either we as a company or me personally have had a relationship with. So these are kind of organically developed opportunities. I was really looking for how do we work directly with playwrights? Because you know we need to kind of go at the inception point of creating work right now so that we can make decisions at each point along the way that are going to best serve the way in which we're able to tell stories right now. And so when you have that opportunity to do that, one of the things that can be harder sometimes in the theater is to be really responsive to the very moment, because the very nature of the development process can take some time. Because of the way these are being developed, we are able to speak so much to this very moment. That was really important to me, that we not shy away from that there are the stories that have particular meaning right now are what we have an opportunity to create in an interesting and new way. So letters to Kamala. You know, when I first started the relationship or the conversation rather with Rachel, I just said, you know, it was literally right after Kamala was nominated, and I'd already been planning on talking with her about commissioning a piece. Kamala had just been nominated, and I said, you know, what would you like to write about? This moment feels like there's something we need to, this is an opportunity to speak to this particular moment. What do you think? And she immediately had a concept, and it just started flowing from there. And then similar with Jerry, you know, I've known Jerry for a long time, and he has a personal, you know, family story about what it is to be really, you know, to be so connected to being an American as a Mexican American. Yeah. And he has told me his family stories over our friendship. And so I just asked him, what story do you think, you know, really resonates with you? What's coming up for you right now? And he did some thinking about it. And so, yeah, these stories are, it's really pretty cool actually to be able to be creating so in the moment and so much speaking to this, what's going on around us, but also to be able to deliver it in a way that's intended for the platform through which we're able to provide it.
That just feels very, like a basic tenet of theater, maybe in the early days, was sort of like the town crier aspect of it, you know, political, satire and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't satire, but it just seems so immediate, like a messaging methodology.
Yes, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that this is getting us to that essence. And I think of like Teatro Campesino and, you know, other theater movements throughout time that have used theater as a way of speaking to that very moment, and have, it's not been about having, you know, these supremely polished and highly, highly developed, you know, heavily, heavily funded productions. It's about like, you know, create something and put it out there and risk it not being, you know, let it just speak to right now.
Isn't that sort of like a cool challenge to an organization like America Stage, where you said, I've got to dot the I's and cross the T's and do all this and sign the papers and get the rights and do the dead and the lights and the text and the contracts and everything. Let's just throw a show up that's very contemporary and see what happens. I mean, that's got to be kind of exciting.
It is. It's like being in college again. I mean, it does come with, you know, because, you know, you start off, you know, with studying this art form, thinking about risk and about, you know, you're not thinking about all of the different other components that you end up kind of getting piled on as you start to really think about the business of doing this work. So it's freeing. It's also, you know, frankly, it is still scary too, because we do still have, you know, keeping the organization strong and sturdy and maintaining an audience that will be excited to come back in our doors when we reopen them. So bills to pay. Absolutely. but that's why we're asking, you know, not just that we're reimagining, but we're asking the community to reimagine with us and come along on that journey with us, and to take the trust that we've built, you know, over the years and invest that in where we're going now.
There are, strange as it may sound, silver linings and all of this, and I'm finding this to be more and more. And I talked with Eric Davis the other day, and it's like, well, we found ways to do what we do, and that's exactly what you're saying. Maybe a muscle you wouldn't have, worked otherwise. So maybe that. Let's talk about the people downstairs. Finally, I saw one of the previews. Funny show,
yeah.
a moving show. That's coming back in January, I think.
Late January, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And that is going to be live, but also streamed. I want to be sure I get the concept correct.
Yeah, so we're calling it our hybrid series.
Yeah.
So when we get into 2021, we have four main stage productions that we have licensed to both perform live and to provide as video streaming. So I didn't want to choose anything. There were titles that we had been that we had secured that we could only secure to do live, and I didn't want to put us in the position of maybe we can do this and maybe we can't. So every play on our main stage in 2021, we plan to produce as a live, in-person, social distance seating, all that good stuff, health and safety measures in place, and to video live stream for those who are not yet comfortable coming out into the theater. If we find that we're in a place that we still are not able to have people into the space yet, we still have that live streaming component. What will that look like? We'll let you know a little bit more about that as we get closer, because that could look something like the actors are still on stage performing it, and we have a three video camera system, but no audience members in the theater. Mm. Or it could be something a little bit removed from that if we need to keep the actors at more of a distance from one another too.
Isn't that little thrill balance kind of cool for actors though? Like, I don't really know what the audience is gonna, I don't really know. Let's go out there and do it. Like, it's like that standing on the precipice thing that feeds actors. Like the unknown. It's not every show's not gonna be exactly the same no matter what happens. Right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, this whole scenario of what's happening to the performing arts is reminding us how much, sounds obvious, but how much the artists are the center of what we do. Because, we have to, as theater producers, you know, my job is to come up with the container around which we can put content out there. What does that framework look like, both financially and structurally? But the artists are game, and we're leaning heavily into their own resilience and their flexibility and malleability inside of all of this. And we couldn't obviously do it without that.
Sassman with the Waldorf. Is this a one-person show?
It is. It is. Terry Teachout, who is a critic for the Wall Street Journal, but also has heavily researched Louis Armstrong and written about him extensively, wrote a play that is from the perspective of Louis Armstrong, but the actor who plays Louis Armstrong also plays Miles Davis and Joe Glasser, who was Louis Armstrong's white manager. Mm. And it's a really compelling kind of tour de force one-hander that you feel you watch it and you feel like it's had more than one actor in it, because it just, you know, it's so full and the storytelling is so dynamic. Yeah. So and that's that one is that, you know, I've had my eyes on that one for a while, and this is a great time to do it, obviously, because for the performance side, the social distancing for the actor won't be an issue. So our ability to present that in February and March, I think will be high, and hopefully live, but certainly live streaming if not. And, and I think too, it's just a cool story for this moment, the celebration of music, of what a true artistic genius is, but also how the politics of race can get involved in the arts. And we're dealing with that in our industry very profoundly right now. So I think it's also a supremely entertaining piece, but also has a lot to say to remind us of the relationship between art and commerce and politics and all of it.
Well, obviously there are other shows in the season, but I didn't want to talk about Footloose, which, you know, come hell or high water, that's going up in Demon Slayer parts.
I cry a little bit inside every time I hear any of the songs, you know, play on the radio. It just is like, you know, I still cry a little bit when Mamma Mia songs come on too, just because that was such a fun experience. But yeah, Footloose, we are back to our, you know, kind of traditional slot of mid-spring, April-May time period 2021, and we intend to have our gala under the stars, and of course outdoor with crowds. We can do a lot more with the social distancing. We'll of course be looking to what are the health and safety measures for the performers that will be relevant at that time when we get closer.
I mean, can you see having the audience spaced out too if it comes to that? Or your outdoors does not matter as much, right? You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we as we know at this point, making predictions and making concrete plans would be a little bit foolish, but we've been working on our health and safety protocols since March, and they keep evolving as we keep getting more data. You know, there's a lot of good research being done out there, and we're also able to, you know, I think we're going to be able to benefit from watching some other organizations, arts and otherwise, make attempts at different things and do a little trial and error and learn from others as we move further into our season.
Well, you know, I just always have to keep adding this, you know, who knows, everything could be coming up roses by then. And let's be optimistic. Are you going to direct it?
I am not sure yet. I'm not fully committing to that yet. But I'll have an announcement on that in the next couple of months.
Retinitis pigmentosa. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. We can just call it RP.
Yeah. RP. Son of a bitch. I think, Stephanie, I think that a lesser person than yourself wouldn't have been able to do what you've done in the last 6 months, because you've known about this for quite a while, haven't you?
February.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've done several interviews. You've done lots of interviews. You've had a million Zoom meetings. But has this always been in the back of your mind? Or maybe in the front of your mind? Like, you know what? I'm talking, but ...
It's been in the back of my mind a lot, sometimes, in the forefront of my mind. But I think, if it had been any other time, I probably would have managed it a little differently, but because it just happened that an international pandemic landed, right as the diagnosis occurred, that my attention was so needed. Around dealing with our response as an organization, that I kept kind of pushing it, to the back.
But eventually you were going to have to start talking about it and tell the board.
I think I thought initially, when, as many of us did when the pandemic first started to impact us all, I thought, let me see us through this. Mm-hmm. And, come summertime or come, a couple of months from now as the reality for all of us really sunk in that this is we're going to be dealing with this for a very long time. That's when I started to have to also deal with my personal situation.
I know you don't like to talk about it, and thank you for letting me, rudely ask just a few things here, and you did make me promise I wouldn't make the whole show about this.
Thank you.
I read a little bit about RP, and I know you probably read miles and miles and miles about RP, but is the prognosis always that bleak?
Here's what I'll say that I have learned is that blindness is a spectrum. It is not, when we think of, for many people, and I did certainly up until February, 2020, I thought, you're blind or you see. I don't know if I consciously thought of it that simply, but, blindness is a spectrum, and there's low vision and, a lot of people with RP don't go fully blind, or don't go fully blind until they're well into their final years. Mm-hmm. But the likelihood of loss of vision to the point of mobility and just a lot of the things that we take for granted, being able to engage in, are significantly compromised for most people who are diagnosed with RP at some point in their life. So without going into more specifics than that, sure. Based on where I am, it became clear to me that there will be considerations for me in the near future around mobility and that I need to start preparing for now. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm going to, I think that the, possibility of there being some continued technological advancements. Research is moving very quickly on this front. Mm-hmm. But I'm a planner, and I, you know, that's
Gee, what's no going to
keep,
you
keep
are
me going. Yeah. That's going to keep me going is I, you know, yeah. I'm going to take some time to really figure out what is this next part of my life look like with or without vision. And that will give me the comfort of whatever happens. You know, I'm ready for it. And right now I don't feel ready for that because I haven't, you know, I haven't had the chance to make space for the things that will be important to me. So that's what I'll be doing. And that's why I'm going to be transitioning out of the leadership position by the end of the season.
Can you imagine, not too many more questions, I promise, you know, staying in theater for as long as you possibly can, and maybe even longer? I mean, can you see that, or is it, I have to get out. I can't do this now. I mean, I'm not going to be able to do this. Do you look at it in absolutes like that?
No, I don't. And I increasingly don't look at life in absolutes. You know, I think that we have, many of us, I think, have grown up, in my generation, definitely, kind of thinking of our work as being, you know, defining ourselves by our work and our identity being very, yeah, very kind of finite. And I think that that's limiting. And I don't think that we necessarily need to think of, I mean, we see, you know, I think it'll just be really interesting to see what happens coming on the other side of the pandemic and how people redefine their lives, in general. And so, theater is a part of me. And so whether it's writing or continuing to direct, you know, for a period of time, I imagine that theater will continue to be a part of me my whole life. But it will look different. It may not be the thing that I depend on for my livelihood.
So you're talking about it maybe next summer. I mean, have you got a definite sort of departure date from American stage? Or have you not worked that out that far?
You know, we'll have an announcement soon about the search for the new, for mm-hmm. my replacement. The board is working on that now. And the thing that I've committed to the board, and I'm committed to just to the community and to the staff, is that I'm not going to leave the organization in the lurch. But I've also let the board know that it's important that this process move forward. So you know, there'll be more information soon on what the time frame looks like.
Well, you know, I'm not the first person to say it, but you've made immeasurable changes here that have all been for the better, and just amazing stuff that's been going on. And I'm not going to get sappy because I'll see you lots and lots before you leave. I hope. But as for right now, I think we've done our little time here. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Hey, I meant to say too, congratulations on your more than 100 sessions. That's
Thanks.
Really pretty awesome. We're glad up to, you took a little vacation.
I think you're like 107 or something now.
It's my lucky number.
Wow.
Well, that's awesome. And thank you Thanks. For what you're doing and keeping us connected by giving us all this platform to share what's going on with our organizations. And it's important. So appreciate it.
Thank you. Is right back at you. I will see you again soon, and you know, pandemic be damned. I'll see you one of these days.
Yeah, check out Reimagine. It's going to be an exciting season. Lots
That's
of great.
That's right. When I do the recap of this show, I'll include the link to the season, and everybody can figure it all out. All right, Stephanie, take care, sweetie.
All right, thanks so much, Bill. All right, great. Bye. Bye, everyone.
From stpetecatalyst.com.